Okay, now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Let's please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Jody.
Just check, I'm just fooling you. No, you get it. Thanks, Mike. Not that I need a microphone, but I'll use one tonight. My name's Jody and I'm an alcoholic. I'm starting to get warm now after all day. The first thing I thought of when I got here tonight, I have this friend, Steve A., and he lives down south, and he was talking, I don't know why this popped into my head, he goes, one time he had to speak, and he was really nervous, and he was able to speak for 5 minutes, and he was done. So now that I put that out there, I'm sure I could speak for more than 5 minutes. For the three new people, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. For the other people who took chips, I'm really glad that you're here and you're putting together a little bit of time. And for all the people that have been here before and are still here, I love you and I'm glad you're here also. The first thing I want to tell you is I know a whole lot of people who've come to Alcoholics Anonymous for the very first time and have never had to take a drink again. However, that is not my story. There's also a handful of people in the room who've been my friend for the last, well, since I got here for about 20 years, and I am really glad that you guys are here. My home group in Las Vegas right now is Pulp Fiction. We have it on Monday nights. It's at the Camel Club on Eastern and Sunset. And if you come at 5:30, we'll be down the street at the pub having dinner before the meeting. My sobriety date today is January 24th, 2005, and I want to tell you that I have 12 years in a row, which is very important for me to say in a row. I got sober in Visalia, and my first sobriety date is August 19th, 1997. That was after going to a rehab, and I'll get back to that in a few minutes. So what it was like for me shortly, I didn't come from an alcoholic family. There's not that many alcoholics on either side of my family. On my mother's side, there was one woman, my aunt, Jay. I never met her, ever, and I drank exactly like her. If you would have asked anyone in my family who was going to be the alcoholic in my family, I would have been the last person that they would have put money on, and here I am. I went through high school and college. Drinking on weekends, it wasn't a big deal, and I can honestly say that alcohol actually does make me sick. I never could really drink that much. I can't tell you how many times I got drunk on Slow Gin and 7-Up, which is really pretty. And it just wasn't a problem. My girlfriend and I, in high school, we used to save up our money so we could buy, like, really good beer because we were cool instead of drinking just beer. I got into college for a year or so. I graduated high school in the 70s, which I pretty much consider the last of the recreational decade for me. We tried a few other things just for fun on weekends. A lot of those things aren't even here anymore, and it just wasn't an issue. I did some traveling when I got out of high school. I grew up in Venice Beach, California, and I want to tell you this. When I was a little girl, there were only winos, and there were no women winos. There was one little lady, and I used to see her walking up and down the Strand, and she had a coat and a hat that matched, and she was pushing a shopping cart way before it was popular. She was it. So my life goes on. I do some traveling. I end up in Santa Barbara. I meet someone there that I fall in love with. We go together for a while. We get married. And we had a lot of friends at the time. I worked in an old family restaurant that had a bar, and we would do shots during our shift, and we'd go out, and we had a really big group of friends. And there was an office down the street, and all those guys used to come in, and we had a really great group of people, and we could drink for fun. I drank for fun for a really long time. As time went on for me, I got married when I was probably about 24, and before I actually got married, there were times that I would go out, and and I would have too much to drink, and I'd be sick for 4 or 5 days. I'd get sick. I wouldn't drink again for a long time, and that would continue for quite a while. When I was pregnant with my first daughter, my dad was also retiring, and I'm the oldest of four kids, and my dad was retiring back to the Valley. My grandparents had bought property in Tipton, of all places, after they lived in Venice for 50 years, and I'm like, what the hell? You know, in Santa Barbara in those days, you could either buy a house or you could have kids. You couldn't do both. We couldn't afford to do both. So my dad was retiring, so we came back here, and it was really nice for a while. My husband's background was a lot different than mine. He's a really great guy, but his family did a whole lot more drinking than I did. They were more interested and educated in wine. And I really learned how to drink with him, and we pretty much became drinking partners. There came a time for us where we would get ready and go out, and we'd have a bottle of wine while we were getting dressed and getting ready to go out and drink with dinner. And that just went along really okay for a really long time. The more I tried to keep up with him, the worse it was getting for me, however. I remember when we had days off and he'd go to the liquor store and come home with, everything. And it was really good for a long time. You know, I learned how to drink a few cocktails before dinner. I learned how to drink 2 or 3 wines with my dinner. I learned how to drink maybe a glass of port after dinner and something else after that. And again, it was okay for a really long time. But something happened to me. And I didn't even see it coming, and I didn't know it was happening. I mean, more and more often, it would turn out that I would have issues with drinking too much. There were a handful of times where we would go, say, to a Christmas party, and one time I can vaguely remember, because I have to tell you that I'm not a functioning alcoholic, and I'm pretty much a blackout drinker. And this one particular time, we had been up at the White Horse for a Christmas party, and I got really drunk, and I got really sick. This is what I remember out of all the stuff that you want to, you know, not forget. I threw up in my very favorite pair of high heels. And my grandfather had to come and get us because my husband could not get me out of the car and get me home. I remember my grandfather coming and pulling me out of the car and taking me home. And that is the kind of stuff that would happen to me when I would drink, because I'm not a good drinker. After a bit more time, drinking was just... It was a regular thing in our house for a long time. I ended up having 2 children. They're about 4 years apart, and life was really good. We found a really nice house to live in here, and we were really comfortable. And the drinking just continued. It just continued. And as time went on, more and more things started happening to me. And I have to tell you that the kid's dad is a very qualified human being, and he takes very good care of our kids, and he's a very responsible person. So what happened down the road for us is the more I became less able to take care of my home and my children, he just kind of picked up the slack. You know, so our life just kept rolling along, even though I'm falling a little bit more behind all the time. You know, we were still going along the way that we were supposed to, so there was not really very many issues. So I have everything I think I'm supposed to have. My house looks wonderful. I mean, my life looks wonderful. I have the house I'm supposed to have. It's very comfortable. All the family dinners are happening at my house. I have these 2 great kids. And I realized at one point, because I don't know about you, but when I grew up, there's all these ideas about what you're supposed to have and what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to feel when you start getting on in your life. And I had all those other things except for how I was feeling. I was starting to feel lonely in my home. I was starting to feel worthless in my home. And actually, I was becoming more and more worthless because I couldn't do that much if I was drinking. And there came a point where we were drinking so much that I realized at one point that I was drinking every day. There came a time for me personally when I was really, really, I was having a lot of pain in my own life. I felt very neglected and I was really lonely. And my husband at the time had one of those jobs where they stop you when you're driving in their car if you're drunk and they take you to jail. And so this was my great thought. If he wants a drunk, I'm going to give him one. And I remember that first drink I took in my laundry room with a half pint of vodka. And that was my thought. If he wants a drunk, I'm going to give him one. And on that day, I started drinking on purpose. And once that started, I lost all control of my drinking. I'm one of those women that is in a lot of the books that I have read. It only takes me like 4 or 5, maybe 6 years to completely lose control of everything in my life due to alcohol. Nothing was really being said to me, but more and more often, you know, Father Tom talks about having the fun, drinking and having the fun, or drinking and then drinking and having the fun, and then the fun starts going away, and then you just have problems. And even when I wasn't drinking towards the end, problems were everywhere. And I started realizing after many very painful events, and I will describe a few of them for you so you'll understand where I've been. And when you say me too, hello, welcome. There's something about alcoholics when they share, at least for me, no matter what the circumstances look like of being at those bottoms, when they talk about how it felt, it's always the same. It doesn't matter what it looks like or what color it is. When you get to that place, it feels exactly, I have felt that feeling through other people share that I have no idea how they got where they went, but the feelings have always been the same. So my drinking gets so out of control, I decided to go back to work part-time, and my family owned a couple of businesses in Fresno, which is the only reason I had that job or kept that job. And for about 9 or 10 months, I was driving back and forth from Fresno. I had my own office. I got to take people to lunch and stuff. And I basically was going there to start drinking in the mornings. And I really didn't have any other responsibilities. And it got to a place where there were hundreds of times that I don't remember driving my car home. 30, 40 miles, don't remember driving my car home. You know, getting up in those, some of those mornings and looking out the window to see if my car was there. My drinking kind of became the topic of conversation at that point. And I started realizing also that I couldn't hold my liquor. And when I was much younger, my father had married a woman who had gone to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was really my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. But the truth for me then, being like 8 or 9 years old, is I liked her way better drunk than I ever did sober. Because when she was drunk and she was passed out in that back room, she was not bitching at us and she would leave us alone. And because I didn't like her, how could I personally ever be an alcoholic like her? So my drinking starts to become a problem, and I'm noticing it as well. But I'm also now being talked to by my dad, my mom, my husband, you know, my family. They are coming over. It's starting to happen like, you know, I can get the Thanksgiving dinner on the table, and that's it. I don't eat it. So I decide that I may have a problem, and so I'm going to quit drinking. I got to start controlling my drinking. And I did what a lot of people do. I did what it describes in Chapter 3 and Chapter 5. I took a trip. I didn't take a trip. I switched alcohol. I would try to go for 2 or 3 weeks and not drink, and then I'd give myself a gift. One time I decided I was going to go visit my sister in, I think she was in San Diego, and I went like 3 weeks and didn't drink, and I got ready to call her, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to have a vacation. She goes, "Oh, you can't come, we're buying a house." And I thought, "You stupid bitch. How dare you buy a house and so that I can't come, and don't you know that I haven't drank in 3 weeks?" That was one of the easier things that I did. And that progressed for another year or so. I hadn't thought about this in a very long time, but one of those Thanksgiving dinners, way before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I knew of you, I had gotten through Thanksgiving that day, and I decided that night that I was going to go to a meeting, and there happened to be a Thursday night meeting over at the Christ Lutheran Church. And in those days, we had the meeting in the room that they have redone, and it used to be a gymnasium. And in one of the places that I used to go buy liquor because, you know, I could control it, which meant I had about six different liquor stores I would go to every day and buy only a half a pint. That's how I controlled my drinking. And there was one time I went over to the Thrifty, which is not there anymore either, and they didn't have any half pints. They only had like half gallons. And I remember standing in that liquor store and staring at that half gallon, and I didn't want to buy that half gallon because I knew that it was too much for me to have in my house. But I could not leave the store without it. And that was one of those times that I brought it home, and, you know, I'm talking about losing 3 or 4 weeks at that point. So on this Thanksgiving, I decide that I'm going to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and of course, I'm really nervous, and I don't want to know anyone there, and I don't want to recognize anyone. Well, a few weeks before that, actually months before that, I had also been hitting the grocery store next door, and there was this really nice man in there. His name was Kevin M., and he... I didn't really know him that well, but a lot of times I would go in there drunk, and he would always come up to me and say hello, and he would ask me if I was okay. And I thought, oh, what a really nice man. So I got to tell you that that first meeting I went to, I walked in the door, and he was standing right at the door that night, which was really cool, because as soon as I saw that man, and he knew I knew, it was cool. You know, I felt a little bit of relief, but I didn't go back to AA for quite a while after that. So I'm still trying to control my drinking. So this is actually one of my best stories, if you want to call it that. It's funny now. Actually, I didn't think that much of it then, but it's pretty good now. So it's our turn to have the 4th of July party on the cul-de-sac, and I had already been, you know, not drinking for 3 or 4 or 5 days, maybe 6, and we have the 4th of July party, and everything's great, and the kids have a great time, and I think I had a Mai Tai that night, I'm not even sure, and I was really proud of myself when I got up the next morning, because I got up the next morning. So I'm in the back, and I'm cleaning, and I'm putting stuff away, and I open my refrigerator, and one of my very gracious neighbors have left me a half gallon of Bacardi 151 in the refrigerator. And so, you know, I started sipping on it because it makes it easier to clean. And at about 6:30 that night, and it's July, I am waking up from being passed out and laying on one of the lawn chairs next to the pool all day long. And my husband was so disgusted with me by then, he didn't turn me over. He didn't cover me up. He just left me there. And I went into the house, and that was my close encounter of the third kind. I actually had a line down my whole body, blistered and red and not. And a lot of other things like that happened. And I have to tell you that a lot of the really... incomprehensible and demoralizing things that happened to me when I was drinking and I was blacked out, I was usually at home, because after that I drink at home in my room by myself. My husband's working graveyards, and the only other people that are there are my children. I did a lot of things at home with my kids, and I found out all these things later on, that when they told me what was happening and what I was doing, I didn't believe them, because I don't do that. So, in August, that next month, my husband decided that I needed to go to rehab, and I was in definitely agreement. So he called Betty Ford for me, and I got to tell you, I was really excited that he called Betty Ford. I thought, I'm going to get a vacation, because that's really all I need is a vacation. I need to go relax, because you people are messing me up. I have to invite people to my house all the time I don't want there, you know, all this stuff. And I got excited, and I'm thinking, God, this was my first thought. I get to go shopping, got to go buy a dinner dress, tennis outfit, new bathing suit. So I'm on the phone for half an hour with them, and they tell me when I'm done, we don't have any room for you right now. And at that moment, that was probably the very first moment in the history of my drinking that I was afraid. I didn't even know what I was afraid of, but I was afraid. So the next week, I went down to Fresno to a place called Cedar Vista. I don't even think that's there anymore. And typically, because the God that I have today, which I did not have then, has a huge sense of humor, they didn't have any room over in the dependency side, so they put me on the other side. And then when I got there, I thought, oh, shit, I'm never going to get out of here. And they put me in a room with a woman who couldn't stop itching, and she couldn't stop talking to herself. And I realized that I didn't have what she had. So I go into the rehab, and I learned a whole lot of stuff. The first meeting that I had there was with three other men, and those three men told me secrets I had never told anyone else. They told things about the thoughts that I had had that I had never shared with another living soul. And when it was time to leave there, I was deathly afraid to go home. I did not want to go home. You know, what I know today is that in my life, all the people that I've had in my life and all the things that have happened in my life and the way that other people have behaved really doesn't have anything to do with me. It's not really been personal. Doing some inventories, I have found out that a lot of the people in my life only behaved the only way that they knew how under the circumstances. And a lot of times, it just wasn't personal. It didn't really have anything to do with me. It's just the only way that they knew how to do what they needed to do. So by the time I was ready to leave there, I didn't want to go. I was afraid. You know, home for me was not a safe place. I have to say also in my home, going to Alcoholics Anonymous was not a favorable choice. And where I come from, you know, if you don't have enough willpower to take care of yourself and stop drinking or do what you need to do, you're weak. And you possibly just may be a failure your whole life. You know, so I'm dealing with these two things. And I think what happens for a lot of people, and I've heard this, and this is really my experience, is, you know, I had a drinking partner. I had a drinking partner. And in the rules of the house, it should have just stayed that way. So it was very difficult for me for probably like 8 years, and I'm just going to cut some of this pretty quick. When I first got sober, I stayed sober for 2 years. I went to two or three meetings every day. I did service in every meeting that I was in because I didn't want to go home. So I did as much service as I could so I could just stay with you guys. This was my big issue. You guys wanted me to find some kind of a power greater than myself, and you kept calling him God. Oh, I don't do God. When I was a little girl, I had the most amazing grandmother, and she was... she was in the choir at church. She taught Sunday school. She was there 4 or 5 days a week. She played the piano. She was in the choir. She did all that stuff. And I would go everywhere I could ever go with her because she always made me feel whole. She made me feel loved. And she made me feel absolutely secure. And I can remember being a little teeny girl walking down the church to go sit with her and looking at all those people who were absolutely comfortable and mesmerized about where they were. And I had no idea what was going on with them. No idea. And when my grandmother died when I was about 10 years old, you know, I'm thinking, I do everything that a good little girl is supposed to do, and I'm trying to do this God thing, and now God has taken away my grandmother, so what the fuck is that? You know, so I had decided early on that I was going to take care of myself, I'm not going to depend on you, and life will go on, and it stayed that way for a really long time. So by the time I got with you guys, and you guys wanted me to do God, I don't have a clue. Not only do I not have a clue, I don't want one. I'm going to come in here and figure out how you guys are not drinking and how you're doing all this stuff, but I'm going to figure it all out by myself. So over the next 8 years, this is what happens for me. When I first get here, I stay sober for 2 years. I drink. I'm sick for 3 or 4 days. I can't keep water in my body. My hair's falling out still. All that stuff that happens when I put alcohol in my body. Then I come right back. As soon as I can get up and walk, I'm back in meetings. Because this is what I found out when I first came here. I don't know what is wrong with you people, but I got the same thing wrong with me. I'm not really sure I want to be an alcoholic, and I'm not really sure I want to stay here, but I want to stay here. I have this huge conflict going inside myself all the time from this old world I come from and this place that is giving me some comfort. And how am I supposed to do what you're doing by myself? So time goes on. Over the 8 years, I have another year. I drink. I'm sick for a week or two. I come back. I have secretaried a meeting drunk, which didn't work out really well. I have walked to meetings from Whittendale to 264. We used to have meetings drunk. I have done all kinds of really stupid shit drunk trying to get to a meeting because this is what I know, and I still know it today. I belong here. Period. I don't know where that came from. I didn't know where it came from then, but I know where it came from now is I have always had a God in my life. I heard somebody say this the other day, and it really made sense to me because we always talk about letting God in. I needed to let God out. I believe that everyone has some kind of sense of soul inside of them, and you still got to open the doors. The God I had before here was the ocean, was the sun, was the moon, was Mother Nature, was the universe. So when I had my very first 6 months of sober, it's February 28th. It's a Sunday. It's 2:30 in the afternoon. I don't know why nobody's home at my house, but we have this border that goes all the way around the yard, and I just decided to take a walk out there. And I was a pretty big gardener, and I still am, but I hadn't, you know, been taking care of my pets, my children. Anything that I needed to take care of before was just not happening. My garden was overgrown, and I looked down in the ground, and all the stuff was popping up out of the ground, all these bulbs and all these little plants. And for some reason, I made the connection that I had a God because God is still taking care of my stuff. You know, that was my first moment of clarity of having a God. And what happened for me over the end, it didn't just happen for me. Now I know I have a God. I still don't trust God. I know I got one. I don't trust him. I still don't trust him. So over the next couple of years, you know, I'm working at trusting God, but I'm still always afraid to trust that thing from that old memory that I have. And this is kind of how it used to work for me is those 8 years that I was here, I could be in here and do all the stuff and do all the service work. I did all the stuff. All the stuff that they tell you is going to keep you sober. And I kept getting drunk. Because I still would get to that place where I would have that fear of that God. I went through my steps. I did all this other stuff, but I still had that fear of God and couldn't trust him. So I would go along and something would happen, and I'd need to take a drink. Because what I do when I come into AA is I hold my breath. Like I'm swimming laps and I do all this stuff with you. But at some point, I got to take a breath. And in those days, taking a breath was taking a drink. So I finally get to a place where, you know, I don't know about you. I've never been afraid to die. And I've never been a 911 prayer to God kind of person. But when I was drunk on many times and I'd wake up after weeks of being in my room in the dark and I woke up one more time, I would be so angry with God that I woke up again. One of the reasons that I stay here now is because I'm afraid I go back out there. I'm not going to die. I think that that's way worse. I don't know about anybody else. I live in Las Vegas. I drive around and see all those poor people out there and stuff. And, you know, there's a place for me on the sidewalk, too, if I choose. So I just keep trusting and trusting and trusting. I want to read something that that got my attention. This is from the 24-hour book. Russell gave me this book when I first got here. I've used it a few times. It's rubber band and taped. And I don't know about you guys, but I read all kinds of stuff all the time. And sometimes, like the 300th time that I read it, it makes sense. Like they just put it in the book. So I have read through this book. I've been reading through this book for 20 years. And one day in September, I came across this page. And it says this. Lord, we believe. help thou our unbelief. This cry for the human heart is an expression of human frailty. It signifies the soul's sincere desire for progress. As a person feels the existence of God and his power, that person believes in him more and more. At the same time, a person is more conscious of his falling short of absolute trust in God. The soul's progress is an increasing belief, then a cry for more faith, a plea to conquer all unbelief, all lack of trust. We can believe that that cry is heard by God and the prayer is answered in due time. And so our faith grows little by little, day by day, little by slowly. And for some reason that made sense for me that day, because that's really how my progress was going, and it was actually written down somewhere. So then I come up across this. Somebody tells me you can't have fear and faith at the same time. That is not my experience. This is how it happens for me today. And I still have fear on a regular basis because I do. So I have fear and it comes in. And then my AA program kicks in and I do my morning stuff and I do my meditation and I call my sponsor and I do a little writing and I start looking at that fear and I start remembering that I have all this stuff and I have all you guys to help me. And the fear starts getting smaller and smaller and the faith gets bigger and bigger until after a little while with a little work, because for me it still takes work, my faith has so shrunken that fear that I could pick it up and carry it or kick it out of the way and go. And it's a process. It happens to me all the time. The promises talk about, I was thinking about this today, the promises talking about, you know, all the stuff that we get to let go of and all the stuff we get and all the insecurities. You get to let go of insecurities. I don't know about you guys, but my insecurities still come back very often. But this is the promise that I get about my insecurities, that when my insecurities come in, I don't have to drink over them anymore. I still have a lot of that stuff I used to get, but I don't have to drink over any of that stuff anymore. Because I've learned how to breathe through my feelings instead of drink through my feelings. I've learned how to breathe in Alcoholics Anonymous because you guys have taught me one day at a time how to do this. People talk about that it takes whatever to keep coming back. I didn't have none of that shit. No courage, no heat, none of that. I knew I belonged here and I didn't give a goddamn what happened to me the day before. I know where I gotta go. It got so crazy for me that there was a while in the Alano Club after a couple of years where they would say, is there anyone in their first 30 days? Please let us have your name so we can identify you. Thank you. And I swear to God, the whole room would turn around and look at me, wait for me to say my name. And I didn't care. I belong here. And what I know today, looking back on my whole life and the experience that I have today, because there was a lot of stuff before I got here, I just didn't know I didn't know. I just didn't know. I have belonged here since the first day I ever wanted to come here. That was a God in my life that I didn't even know that I had or I didn't even know that I wanted. This big book is designed to help you clean up your life, but it's also designed to help you find a God of your own understanding. Because for me, the experience I have had so far is there is no human power that has ever been able to relieve my alcoholism. Otherwise, I would have been able to stop drinking because I loved my children. I could have stopped drinking for my children. I could have stopped drinking for a lot of other things that I never could stop drinking for over. Because I am powerless over alcohol. I didn't know I could do this. And then I did it. So if you're new, welcome. If you're lucky enough not to die when you go back out those doors and you come in here again, you just keep coming back no matter what. It's taken me 20 years to get 12 in a row.
That's right.
And I'm going to keep coming back so I can get 12 more. My name is Jody and I'm an alcoholic.